Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history. Today's episode is a dedicated episode to the last entry of the logbook of the whaler, the Swan of Hull. Those of you who are regular listeners will know that we have been reading extracts from her logbook at the start of each episode, just with the exception of the iconic ships episodes and the Great Sea Fights series. These readings come from a transcription of the logbook held in the archives of the Caird Library at the National Maritime Museum in London. The transcription was made especially for this podcast, and so you, the listeners, were the first ever to hear these words read aloud. That made this podcast itself a little piece of maritime history. We began her story in October, on exactly the same day that she became stuck in the ice off the west coast of Greenland in 1836, and we have followed it through to now, to the middle of April, which is when her logbook ends. The last we heard, they had just recovered their crew members from their failed attempt to secure help from land. Daniel Knight, one of the few men who survived the attempt to reach land, is seriously injured. It's been a truly terrible week, and they are being teased by ice breaking all around them, though their ship is still beset, and scurvy is now killing the crew fast.
Wednesday, 12th of April. First part of this day commences with strong breezes, the ship drifting past another berg within 5 minutes' walk of us. Latter part, light winds, the waves of water being skimmed over with bay ice. Thermometer 10 below zero. Daniel Knight's leg amputated this morning. Thursday, 13th of April. Light winds and clear weather, the ship being quite stationary. Middle and latter part light breezes, ship driving north. Our situation and prospects compel us to diminish our weekly allowance of bread, 0.5 pound. Yet so blind were some of our men to their own interest that this prudent measure was regarded by them with dissatisfaction, and they had that stupidity and unthoughtfulness to ask for more. Daniel Knight, whose leg was amputated yesterday morning, is doing well, but the chance of saving the other is very little, the inflammation extending itself very fast. Latitude by observation 70 degrees by 12 north. Sunday, 17th of April. Strong breezes and fine clear weather, the ship drifting off to the westward. A great lane of water has broken out south of us, but the ice in which we are froze up is quite stationary. Latitude by observation 70 degrees by 13 north. Tuesday, 18th of April. Light breezes and fine clear weather. A 270-gallon shake cut up this day for fuel. A few minutes before 12 this night, Lawrence Duncan, Shetlander, expired, having lingered a long time in a complete state of debility. Latitude by observation 70 degrees by 12 north. Wednesday, the 19th of April. Light breezes and fine clear weather. A 260-gallon shake, number 41, cut up for fuel. Average of thermometer 20 degrees. At 8 a.m, Daniel Knight's remaining leg was amputated, there being no chance of saving any part of the foot. This afternoon, James Jamerton, Shetlander, died in the last stage of scurvy. Thermometer 26. Thursday, 20th of April. Light winds and fine warm weather. At noon, called all hands and interred our poor shipmates. Middle and latter parts, fine weather. The carpenter employed in making a jib boom. A 260-gallon shake cut up for fuel. Friday, the 21st of April. Light winds, fine weather, the ship driving north very slowly. This afternoon, Robert Brady, seaman, died of scurvy, and such was the filthy state of his bedclothes that they were thrown overboard.
That was the very last entry for the logbook, and little is known about what happened next. What we do know is that she finally escaped the ice and fell in with a fleet of whale ships that spring. 10 sailors were put on board her to navigate her home, along with fresh provisions. From her original complement of between 50 and 60 men, including some of a wrecked ship whom she had taken on board the previous summer, only 17 were alive when she reached Lerwick. And she finally made it back to Hull in July 1837, long after she had been given up for lost. We know that some of the men actually held out until they sighted land and died only then. One sailor who heard of this wrote, "I knew two men of her crew very well. Smart fellows they were and good seamen, and they both died just within sight of home. I have sometimes wondered at it, and I never could well make it out. Why, after holding out so long, they gave in then. Perhaps hope kept them up, and then, when their desire was like to be fulfilled, it was too much for them, and they so weak." We're pleased to have finished reading this logbook, and we'll certainly bring you more historical sources over the coming weeks. Before we go, we've had some fascinating queries posted on our free forum. You can find it at snr.org.uk. That's the website of the Society for Nautical Research. From Kevin Stall, we've had this query about navigation. "When working on a master's, I took a class on early Alaskan history. I was fortunate to find a record of the daily noon sightings, and at the time I was working with a lat long on AutoCAD. I plotted the entire trip and found a few strange entries. A few of the positions were impossible. We knew exactly where she was on several of these occasions. The ship was anchored in the Bay of Kayak Island, but on her second day, the noon sighting placed her 60 miles inland. On another occasion, the sighting showed the ship on the other side of the Aleutian Islands. The ship, St. Peter, never went to the north of the Aleutians chain. I know that errors are common in sextant, but when the ship is anchored in the same bay for 3 days, and the second sighting shows them 60 miles inland, but the third one shows the correct location, why would a captain record such an obvious error? Does anyone have any ideas?" That's an absolutely great question. I love that. Another from Jane Wickenden. "I'm researching a surgeon in the Royal Navy on the West Africa station between January and June 1845. How was his will deposited with his nephew's law firm in Adelaide, South Australia, in mid-May 1845? His service record does not indicate that he was ever on the Australian station. I'm assuming he wrote a new will when the news of his mother's death on the 11th of December 1844 reached him. I've read Brian Vale's article, The Post Office, The Admiralty and Letters to Sailors in the Napoleonic Wars. New South Wales and Tasmania were on the packet ship route by 1835, but not South Australia, as far as I can see." An interesting one there from Jane about post reaching Australia. And finally, a query from David Manley in response to our recent podcast episode on the various sinkings during the Falklands War. David writes, and this is just in part, As someone with deep interest in the Falklands campaign for 40 years and in a professional capacity for over 30, I was keen to see what Paul had uncovered through his extensive use of Freedom of Information requests, and I was not disappointed. It is an excellent piece of work. The chapter on the loss of Sheffield was of particular interest. I was pleased to see reference to the MOD paper that re-evaluated the loss of Sheffield, but surprised to see the re-evaluation result that the Exocet warhead most likely did detonate as being in doubt. Now, David goes on to conclude, with the benefit of modern verified and validated analysis codes coupled with trials and operational evidence that was not available to the Board of Inquiry at the time, a very strong case supported by technical peer review was made that the Exocet that hit Sheffield did indeed detonate as designed. And indeed, that is now the line that is briefed in the Royal Navy's Command Warfare course and the Ministry of Defence's various survivability courses to designers and planners in the MOD and UK industry. Well, fascinating stuff there. Do please also enjoy everything else we have to offer on the Society for Nautical Research's website at snr.org.uk, including, over a century of articles from the Mariner's Mirror Journal. Do please find us on social media. Please follow us. Please leave a review on iTunes. It makes a huge difference to the popularity of the podcast. But best of all, please do join the Society for Nautical Research, and your subscription fee will go towards publishing the latest and the most important maritime history and towards helping to preserve our maritime heritage.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.